is the last talk by Rod Ranathan. Trees and beads and balloons and hoops.
Okay. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for coming. Sorry for not being so high tech as Aaron and Anna, where it's going to be much lower level math. Anyway, here's the general sketch. So I will be talking for 15 minutes, generalized 15 minutes, it may be 30, about topology, and basically I will be telling you about a class of knotted objects and various operations you can do between them. Then I will be talking for another generalized 15 minutes about algebra, so this is this column, and it will be the same operations and the same object parameterized by the same things with the same operations and the same relations between them. So therefore, to construct a map from topology to algebra, you just need to define it on the generators of this column and say what the values are here. Okay? This I will do in this box here. Okay? And after that, I will use the remaining time, which will probably be minus 13 minutes or so, to tell you why I care. So roughly speaking, because it's related to quantum field theory, because it's computable, because it's a tip of a huge iceberg, and because it gives you, in some sense, the best formulas I'm aware of for the Alexander polynomial. Anyway, let's start. So let's start with the 15 minutes on topology. So let me define a collection of knotted objects. So knotted balloons and hoops for T and H. So T is some finite set of labels. H is some other finite set of labels. C stands for balloons or tails. And H stands for hoops or heads. And here's what a KBH is with a set of T of balloons and a set H of hoops. So what it is it's a ribbon embedding, and for the purpose of this talk, you need to know what ribbon is. Okay, so I will not even define it. But it's a ribbon embedding into R4 or S4 of a space that looks like this. This is a space in which you have a base point and to which you attach by strands a set T, or a set of balloons labeled T, and a set of hoops labeled H, labeled X. Now, a balloon is a two-dimensional sphere, well actually oriented. Here's another one. A hoop is a one-dimensional sphere, also oriented. And, well, they're all labeled. And basically I'm looking at the collection of all ways of knotting these things in R4.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
I know you didn't want to define ribbon, but is there a cyclic ordering at the vertex?
No, it's not that ribbon.
Okay.
It's a different ribbon.
Okay.
And I don't want to define it. And much of my talk is completely irrelevant.
Okay.
Okay. Examples. Okay? Even before that, typically I will map this point, the base point, the common base point, to infinity, and then it just looks as if all these lines just shoot to infinity, if I try to draw it. So, example, here is epsilon x, the unknotted hoop, labeled x. Okay? Here is epsilon u, the unknotted balloon labeled U. And let me explain how you read this picture. A balloon is supposed to be a two-dimensional sphere in R4. What I'm drawing here is sort of a tennis racket in R3. Okay? So to make it into a balloon, you take the net of the racket, you make two copies of it, and you push one of it up in the fourth coordinate, and the other one down in the fourth coordinate, and now you got a sphere whose projection to R3 still looks like this, but it's actually a balloon in R4. This you do only to the net. not to the handle and not to the rim. Okay? So basically you get a picture like this one, except the coordinate shown here is the fourth coordinate. Okay? Next example. So here is the KBH. I will denote by rho plus of ux. It has one balloon interpreted just as before, one hoop interpreted just as before. Now, the picture in R3 appears to have a singularity, but remember that the net was pushed up in R4 or down in R4, well, there are two copies. So in R4, there is actually no intersection between the hoop and the balloon. Okay? So this is actually the first actually knotted example of a KBH, sort of informally knotted. Okay? There is a similar one in which the hoop punctures the balloon the other way, or goes through the balloon the other way, and this I will call rho minus. Yes?
Could you just, for those of us who are not sort of in, could you say where you're heading?
I said it at the beginning.
I'm going to talk about topology, then I'm going to talk about algebra, maybe.
So, okay, I said I'm going to construct a space of topological objects.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to construct a corresponding space of algebraic objects.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to construct an invariant of ones into the other, of the topological things into the algebraic things. And then I'm going to tell you why I care about this invariant.
Okay.
That's the second page of the handout. But if you, but the brief summary was that it's related to quantum field theory, it's computable, it's a tip of a huge iceberg, and it leads to the best formulas to construct the to compute the Alexander polynomial in three dimensions. Okay? So, okay, next example. So the next example is a construction. Okay, so given an ordinary tango, there is a way to construct a KBH out of it, and I think the way is more or less summarized by the picture, but let me explain the picture. Okay, so, well, the blue things in this picture are the hoops, the pink-red things are the balloons. The balloons should be interpreted the way the previous balloon was interpreted. So basically, you should push, well, you should take each membrane here, make two copies of it, push one of them up in along the t-direction and the other one down along the t-direction. And then I wanted to make a few comments. First of all, here I didn't bother to specify the sense of the crossing between the two hoops. And the reason is that these are one-dimensional things in R4, and there is no knot in R4, there is no difference between an over and an under crossing. So I didn't need to bother the sense of this. Okay? In fact, here I did bother to specify that this blue strand goes behind the red tube. Okay? I mean, this red thing gets blown up into a tube, and I did bother to specify that it's behind, but it's meaningless. I could have specified it the other way just as well. Okay? However, this is a genuine crossing somehow, and likewise this is a genuine crossing. And this genuine crossing has, well, there is no, in R3 there appears to be a singularity here, but again my convention will be that I push up things, I push away things in R4 to a distance proportional to the distance from the boundary. So basically, this tube gets pushed up and down little, and this wide tube gets pushed up and down near its center a lot. And therefore, in R4, these things actually do not intersect. Okay? Another comment, well, this sort of top, or this cap, I could somehow pull through without any singularity, okay? So in fact, I could pull this out. So this knot is not presented in the simplest possible way, Okay, I could simplify it a little.
Can you say how the blue thing and the red thing, so when you said there is the general crossing, what does it mean?
It doesn't mean anything. What it really means is that I cannot pull it out. Okay, if I try to pull blue out, I can't. I mean, it will have to go through the rim, and the rim is in ordinary R3. Okay?
There's no obvious isotopy.
Or there is no isotopy that will take the blue out. Or alternatively, compare this crossing or this local feature with this local feature, they are different. Okay? I could isotope blue from behind red here to above red, but I cannot isotope blue from behind red or above red to going through red. So that's the only meaning of genuine. Okay?
How many intersection points are there?
Where? Here?
Yes.
Zero in R4. The projection to R3 has one, and it is right here. In R4, there are none, because, again, I take this membrane and I push it out in R, I push it in up in the T direction or down in the T direction to make a tube. Okay? The blue line remains always in the T equals zero part of R3, but the pink actually gets pushed away from T equals zero. So this is not an intersection point.
Which isotopes you allow all isotopes in R4?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, if you want to have lunch, you should sort of see the image, but sort of leave the tiny details for. Okay. I should say two things. First of all, this construction, which essentially maps ordinary tunnels to KBHs, is mostly due to Shin Sato. I think Shin Sato did the pink, and I have added the blue. And the other thing I want to say is somehow the key to the sort of loveliness of this of the story that will come, it hasn't come yet, but the key to it is somehow in this picture. So in R3, nodes play a dual role. On the one hand, they are elements, okay, on the one hand, they make a fundamental group for their complement. They make that fundamental group. On the other hand, they are elements of that fundamental group. They are the longitudes of themselves, okay? So they play this dual role, and when you switch to four dimensions, the roles get split. So the two-dimensional things create the fundamental group of the complement, and the one-dimensional things measure it. So somehow, the person and its shadow, the two things that in R3 are attached, disconnect in R4, and this allows me to treat them slightly differently, as I will in a few minutes. Okay? A little bit more about this map delta, which is mostly due to Sato. So first of all, basically the way it is defined is, well, near the ends of the tangles, so near the tails, you put, well, local configurations that look like this. Near the heads, you put local configurations that look like this. And near the crossings, you put, again, local configurations like this, that look like this. And the reason I'm showing this is because it can be slightly generalized to virtual tangles, so you can generalize to crossings in which the sense is not defined, and then you simply map them to local configurations that look like this, so in which you do not specify, well, sorry, in which the ribbons somehow do not have a crossing between them. They have the sort of null crossing in R4, the one which does not have sense. Okay? Now, this map delta is now defined on tangles that have both ordinary crossings and virtual crossings, and as such, you can check that it satisfies, that it respects the usual Rademeister moves, meaning the Rademeister moves on tangle diagrams go to isotopies in R4. So it respects the usual Rademeister moves, the so-called virtual Rademeister moves that involve this crossing, the detour move, which appears in the definition of virtual knots, if you've seen it, and if not, it doesn't really matter. And they also respect the so-called overcrossings commute relation, which says that if you have a virtual crossing and a strand going over it, you can slide it down to the other side. Okay? And the sort of interesting part of the picture that explains it is here. So if you have a band and two bands cross through it, and the two bands themselves have a virtual crossing between them, you can slide it to the other side. Okay? And again, in R4, this process is entirely non-singular, because at all points of time, this band is wider than these two, so it gets pushed more. Okay? However, the opposite, so there is some breaking of symmetry between overcrossings and undercrossings. So if you flip these two crossings and let the horizontal strand go under, then you do not have the corresponding relation. Undercrossings commute does not hold. Indeed, if you try to push this picture up, well, you just can't. You get things twisted. Okay? So, okay, a few more comments about this map delta. So first of all, delta, so okay, ordinary knots, U knot stands for usual knots. So the usual knots, can be thought of as 1-1 tangles, and therefore as tangles, and therefore by the map delta, they get mapped into KBHs, which have one balloon and one hoop. So the claim is that delta injects the usual knots into KBH. So if I construct invariants of KBHs, in particular, I construct invariants of knots. Likely the same is true for usual tangles, but I'm not a good enough topologist to say it with confidence. Cameron Gordon probably will say it after lunch in 1 minute. Okay? Delta maps, it extends from U knots to V tangles, as I said, and it maps V tangles to KBH, and the kernel contains everything that I've written here, and conjecturally, that's all. However, this is still an open problem. Now, even if there is more to the kernel, it's away from ordinary knots. On ordinary knots, the delta is injective. Okay, so at worst case, I mean, even if I construct invariants that are invariant under these moves, and there are other moves that we missed, still at least I get an invariant of ordinary tangles. Okay. So in the weakest form, I still get invariants of ordinary tangles here. And finally, delta is essentially onto. If you allow dropping components, delta becomes onto. So if I want to talk about ribbon, knotted balloons and hoops, it's enough to look at the image via delta of virtual tangles. Okay. The point is that KBH has a bunch of operations on it that make it a good-looking space. Well, punctures and cuts I already mentioned. If you puncture a balloon, it disappears. If you cut a hoop, it becomes homotopically trivial. So basically, you can get rid of balloons or hoops. There is a connected sum operation. So if you have one KBH and another KBH, you can take their connected sum by merging their base points. And it's well defined, though I don't want to talk about why. And then comes the interesting operation, and also my balloon to beat Polyak's balloons. Okay? So
remember that if X is a topological space, then pi 1 of X is a group, and pi 2 of X is an abelian group, and furthermore, there is an action of pi 1 on pi 2. Similarly, hoops are one-dimensional, so they form sort of a group. Balloons form sort of a group, and there is sort of an action of balloons on hoops. So let me be specific. Suppose you have a KBH K, and here is a schematic drawing of it, but it's entirely schematic. I mean, I really mean that these balloons could be knotted, and these hoops could be knotted with those balloons, and it could be knotted, okay? There are several operations that I can perform. If you choose two of the hoops, say U and V, I can perform an operation called tail multiply, so, or balloon multiply, so tail multiply of the balloons U and V, putting the output in a balloon that will be labeled W, so W has to be a new label, a label that's not in the previous, in the existing set of labels. And all that you do is you merge these two balloons basically along their necks. So this is now just a bigger two-dimensional sphere. Okay? By the way, I write operations to the right rather than to the left. And so double slash is sort of newspeak for applying an operation. Okay. So this is like the pi 2 multiplication. There is an operation that looks also like pi 1 multiplication, and it's the operation of merging two of the hoops. So it's head multiply of x and y with output and z, and this is what I do here. Okay? And finally, there is an operation, tail by head action of tail u by head x, and what it is you take the neck of the balloon U and you tie it along, you pull it along the hoop X. Okay? So now the reason why this red balloon is here, this hard balloon is here, well, it sort of symbolizes two of the operations. I mean, it indicates, it tells us both about this a tail multiply operation. Basically, you put the two lobes of the balloon and you put them along the original two balloons you had previously, and also the tail by head action. So the tail by head action is what you do to a balloon before you give it to Misha Polyak. Okay, you tie the end, right? So that the air will not run out. Okay? Okay. A few comments. These operations are not group multiplications, okay? These are unary operations. A group multiplication is a binary operation. These operations are all unary. They take a single KBH and produce a single KBH, be it any one of those, as an output. They don't take two KBHs, okay? So these are unary operations, and therefore it doesn't make sense to say that they form a group. However, they satisfy some properties that are like the properties of a group. Namely, there is a meta-associativity property. So if you let M be either tail multiply or head multiply, then multiplying A and B, putting the output in A, and then multiplying A and C, putting the output back again in A, is the same as multiplying B and C, putting the output in B, and then multiplying A and B, putting the output in A. And that's an analog, I mean, this is sort of similar to associativity in a group. However, it's an identity between unary operations. Okay? Likewise, so it doesn't make sense to say that pi 1 acts on pi 2 because these are not groups, but it does make sense to say that this satisfies more or less or similar axioms to the axioms of a group action. Namely,
Well, there is a group action axiom saying that if X acts on the product of U and V, it's the same as X acting on U times X acting on V. The parallel thing in this language will be that if you multiply U and V, call the result W, and then act on W by X, then that's the same as acting on X by U, sorry, acting on U by X, then acting on V by X, and then multiplying. Likewise, if you, in a group action, if X times, well, X times Y can act on an element, on a thing U, and that's the same as first acting on U by X, and then acting on U by Y, and again, there is a unary way of writing these axioms. So let me call, from now, from this point on, a collection like this of sets depending on two finite sets, T and H, on which there are operations as here, so these operations, but I guess I also mean that one, the star, which satisfy these axioms that look like the group action axioms, let me call such a thing a metagroup action. And I've just constructed the first example out of topology. Okay. Oh my God. It really, the 15 minutes really got generalized. Okay. You know what, I think I'll skip, I'll say this very briefly. I'll only say that, remember that there is a map from tangles to KBHs. There is a multiplication operation on tangles as well. You can concatenate two strands of a tangle, okay? And basically, the concatenation of strands in a tangle becomes a composition of operations on KBHs, which is roughly like the construction of the semi-direct product of pi 1 and pi 2. So in some sense, ordinary tangle theory embeds into KBHs as some sort of a semi-direct product. The only significance of this statement is that if I describe a way to construct invariants of KBHs which has enough power to define the to give you the invariant of an ordinary crossing, then since every tangle is a composition of many ordinary crossings, I will get an invariant of arbitrary tangles. So basically, it's enough to, basically what this says is that if you want to understand tangles in the context of KBHs, it's enough to understand these operations. And then the next comment which I want to say very briefly is that you could talk about finite type invariants in the usual, well, in a way parallel to the usual way of finite type invariants of knots. Roughly, you will be talking about differences, and what I will be talking about in the next 15 minutes will be basically about the primitive part of this finite type theory. And again, if you know something about ordinary chord diagrams and primitive elements within them, then you know what I'm talking about, and otherwise, ignore me. Okay. So, okay, 15 minutes on algebra. So I want to give you a collection of algebraic spaces that have the exact same operations on them, okay? So let T be a finite set of tail labels, let H be a finite set of so-called head labels, and M one half of T and H, so one half because this is half the work. The other half will come later, okay? So M1 half of T and H will be the freely algebra well, degree completed freely algebra, so I'm allowing infinite power series generated by the generators in T, but raised to the power H. So basically, lists of elements of the freely algebra, one for each head label. So the freely algebra, well, if you haven't seen a definition, well, basically you take this, your set of generators, and you allow yourself to take arbitrary brackets between them, except you model by the anti-symmetry and the Jacobi. And alternatively, things like this can be thought of as trees. And so M1 half of a set of tail labels followed by a set of head labels will just mean basically lists of elements of the freely algebra labeled by the x's, so by the heads. So x will get this element of the freely algebra, y will get this element of the freely algebra, and conveniently I like to write the x near the head of the tree that represents the element of the in a freely algebra. So that's a typical element in M1 half of some collection of labels. Okay? Now I want to tell you about operations from M1 half to M1 half. There are several. So the tail multiply operation will be, so if you want to multiply two tails, you simply identify them. Namely, every place, so you take such a list of element of trees, and every place you see a tail called U or a tail called V, you replace it by W. And since these are ordinary replacements, it's very easy to check that they satisfy meta-associativity. So if you replace U and V by U, and then U and W by U, altogether you've replaced U and V and W by U, so that's the same as what you get on the right-hand side here, okay? More interestingly, there is a head multiply operation. So what it does is the following. Suppose you have the list lambda, so lambda is a name for such a list of words in the freely algebra. Suppose you have a list lambda and you wanted to multiply x and y with output called z. What you do is, well, first of all, you remove from this list the two freely elements corresponding to x and y, but then you add to it a new element corresponding to z, labeled z, which will be the BCH product of the thing that you used to have on x and the thing that you used to have on y. So where the BCH product is the usual logarithm of product of exponentials, and the BCH theorem says that it's actually a freely element. And you can check that BCH satisfies a certain associativity property, which implies the corresponding head multiply associativity axiom. Okay? Next, I have to tell you about an operation parallel to tail by head action. So what it is the following. So you take your list lambda of Lie words and you act on it by an operation that I will call repeated conjugation of U by lambda sub x. So you look at the x coordinate of lambda and you apply repeated conjugation of U by lambda sub x. So I have to tell you what repeated conjugation is. It's the following thing. So first of all, let me define what ordinary conjugation is. So the conjugation of U by minus gamma, it is an operation going from the freely algebra to the freely algebra, and it's simply the substitution. Every place you see a U in an element of the freely algebra, so if you are in the freely algebra, every place you see a U, you replace it by U conjugated by e to the minus gamma. Okay?
Or more precisely, since I want to stay in the Lie algebra, well, e to the minus gamma u, e to the gamma, is the same as e to the minus ad gamma applied to u. So really, this conjugation operation will map u to a certain power series of brackets of u bracketed with many instances of gamma. Okay? Now, it's tempting to think that this operation is invertible, and it's tempting to think that the inverse of conjugation by minus gamma, or by e to the minus gamma, will be conjugation by e to the gamma. So it's tempting to think that the inverse of conjugation of u by minus gamma will be conjugation of u by gamma. But it isn't. Okay? And the reason is that once I've conjugated every instance of u by gamma, I will get many gammas in the picture, and gamma in itself might have u's in it. Gamma is in itself an element of the free Lie algebra, and it might have u's in it. So now if I'll unconjugate by minus gamma, then I will have the desired effect, but also an undesired side effect, that all the u's inside the gammas will be unconjugated themselves also. Okay? This is the parallel of a statement about free groups, which is that, you know, if you have a free group and you look at the automorphism of it defined by taking one of the conjugators, one of the generators, u, and conjugating it by a word x. The inverse of that automorphism is not conjugation by x inverse. In fact, it's typically not invertible. Okay? However, in the free Lie algebra, it is invertible. And let me call the inverse of this reverse conjugation by negative gamma, by gamma. Or alternatively, you can check that reverse conjugation just means repeated conjugation. So you replace every u by u conjugated by e to the gamma, and then in the result, you replace every u that got newly created by the gammas again by it. You conjugate it again, and then in the result, you again conjugate every u by e to the gamma, so you sort of iteratively conjugate, you iteratively apply cu of gamma, but and in this free Lie algebra it converges. I think I don't want to go through the proofs, but the point is that this newly defined THA operation satisfies the same metagroup action axioms as before. So this axiom and that one. Okay. Up to this point, everything that I told you, is essentially the Milner invariance done in some algebraic way, and should not have surprised Milner. Okay, Milner should have maybe thought that was a way of presenting his things, but there is nothing new in it. Now comes something that Milner wouldn't have known, and it's a little bit of an extra spice. So let me tell you about it, and this is wheels. So let me define the full MTH space to be the half-work space cross, this is not tensor product, it's just Cartesian product, the set of cyclic wheels on the alphabet T, where cyclic words on a certain alphabet means, well, basically wheels with beads in that alphabet, or alternatively, here is a less creative way of writing it.
Or alternatively, well, in fact, cyclic wheels on an alphabet is the same as, sorry, cyclic words on an alphabet is the same as cyclic words on trees on that alphabet. So if you had a wheel of trees, it would be the same as an ordinary wheel, because you could take each of these trees and collapse it to the skeleton of the wheel using essentially the brackets. So usually, or in finite type language, using the IHX relation. So you will be mapping a vertex near the wheel to, well, labeled U and V, to U times V minus V times U. Okay? Okay. Now, on this extended space, I can extend the operations. So the operations T, tail multiply, and head multiply, I will extend with no change. The tail by head action will be, so I will map a pair, lambda, which is a list of Lie words, semicolon omega, which is a linear combination of wheels, to lambda comma omega acted on by reverse conjugation of U by gamma. Sorry, this should have been by of U by lambda sub x, by the x component of lambda. Except before that, I will add a certain amount of spice to the wheels I had previously. Okay? And the spice that I add is defined as follows. So first of all, there is a map called div sub u, divergence in the direction of u, which maps Lie words into cyclic words. And it is basically the sum of all ways of connecting the tail of gamma near one of the U, sorry, the head of the head of gamma near one of the tails labeled U. So you can connect the head either near here or near here. In either case, you get a wheel of trees, and a wheel of trees is like an ordinary wheel. Okay, so this gives you a map div sub u from the freely algebra to cyclic words. And then what I will do is I do the following crazy thing. The spice part of this will be defined to be, well, it will be the integral from 0 to 1 ds of, you take gamma, you apply to it reverse conjugation of u by an amount s gamma, then you take to the divergence, and then you conjugate u back by an amount negative s gamma. Why and where this comes from, I cannot explain right now. Okay? But the theorem, and it's highly non-trivial, is that all blue identities still hold. So I still have a metagroup action, and the algebra side is, well, has the same kind of spaces and the same kind of operations which satisfy the same kind of axioms as the topology side. I should have said that there is also a merge operation parallel to the topological merge operation, but I think I don't really have time for that. So the moral: to construct an m-valued invariant of tangles or v-tangles, and almost certainly an invariant or nearly an invariant of KBH, depending on this conjecture, which I mentioned at the beginning, it is enough to declare zeta on the generators of KBH. And while I didn't say it, the four initial examples of KBHs that I mentioned were the generators, are the generators, given these operations. Okay? So let me just define the invariant. The invariant is, well, you map the empty things essentially to empty things, the unknotted things essentially to empty things. It's not terribly interesting. You map the positive kind of 4D hop flink to zero wheels and simply the leeward U. Okay? With label X, X corresponds to the hoops, to the hoop. And likewise, the negative hopfish thing gets mapped to the negative of the same thing. And now the theorem is that zeta, first of all, using this procedure, extends to an invariant of KBHs. Second, this invariant is in some sense the unique universal finite type invariant, or the logarithm of the unique universal finite type invariant of KBH, which respects all the operations that I've stated. Okay? And I should say that this is the tip of a huge iceberg, because, well, the next thing to do would be to extend tangles to tangles with trivalent vertices and do a corresponding sort of form extension on the balloon side. And then the extension of this theorem becomes the existence of associators on the U side, on the usual tangle side, and the Alexeyev-Torossian sort of theory of the Kashiwara-Verne conjecture on the balloon side. It's a tip of an iceberg. I cannot say anything about it. I'll only say that there is a nearly finished paper on the subject with Zhuji Dancho. Here is a picture. And you might have heard me before talk about actually the harder stuff, which is in that paper. This is more of the iceberg. These are various handouts from previous talks I gave about it. So I think this is the Kashiwara-Verne story here. But I don't think I want to say anything more about it. And in the 3 minutes that I have left, just a very quick summary of why am I happy. First of all, you know, it may have sounded abstract, but it's absolutely and totally computable. And when I say computable, I don't mean in some theoretical thing sense. I mean I have a program and here are the computations. Okay? So this is the invariant of the Borromean tangle. It should be a linear combination of trees. In fact, trees planted in pots of three different colors, red, green, and blue. But I'm showing only the red part. You can get the other parts by cyclic symmetry. Well, and I'm showing it only to degree 5, though I've computed it much more. And here is the wheels part of the same invariant. And these are genuine, these are real numbers. This is the correct answer. The next thing that I will not have time to say is that if you take an honest Lie algebra, then elements of the free Lie algebra describe formulas written in that Lie algebra. Okay? Using this principle, and likewise wheels describe somehow traces of formulas in that Lie algebra. Using this general principle, you can, given a choice of a finite dimensional Lie algebra, any finite dimensional Lie algebra, not necessarily even metrized, you don't need a metric, you get a map from the target space of my invariant into some Lie algebraic space. Again, I don't think I want to even precisely say what it is, but I will only say that when you take this map and compose it with the invariant zeta that I've just defined, conjecturally, you get a complete evaluation of the BF topological quantum field theory. Okay? And the next thing I will not say is that Well, I told you that everything was computable, and I tried to demonstrate it by giving the computation, but it's still an exponential time computation. Because even if it's actually, you know, relatively easily programmable, it's still exponential time, because the number of trees grows exponentially, the number of cyclic words grows exponentially. However, the story has many finite dimensional quotients, sorry, not finite dimensional, polynomially dimensional quotients. So quotients for which the dimension in degree d will be a polynomial in d. Here is one. You declare that the bracket is equal to, well, this combination of arrows and wheels, and again, I really don't have time to tell you more about it, but in this quotient, everything that appeared in this story, so the BCH formula, conjugation, repeated conjugation, everything not only can be computed, but in fact can be computed in terms of closed form formulas. Okay? So the whole story becomes a story given in terms of closed form formulas. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you what they are, but tail multiply becomes a certain simple-minded operation on matrices. Head multiply becomes another simple-minded operation on matrices, and finally, tail by head action is, well, not so simple-minded, but still an operation on matrices. Okay. This done, you get a closed-form computable invariant of KBHs, and therefore invariant of tangles. Okay. And the general form of the computation is a form that I like very much. Namely, if you want to compute the invariant of a complicated tangle, you do it by first of all computing the invariant of one crossing, then computing the invariant of another crossing, then specifying how to connect them, then adding yet another crossing, then specifying how to connect them, and so on. And each step of the computation is the computation of the invariant of some specific topological object. So each step of the computation is the computation of the invariant of some tangle, which really corresponds to some KBH. So unlike the usual computation of the Alexander polynomial, the usual computation of the Alexander polynomial is that you construct a big matrix in some sensible way, and then you push it into Gaussian elimination, which is a nonsensical way, nonsensical thing. So Gaussian elimination is a sort of a lengthy process whose steps do not correspond to topology. However, if you compute using this procedure, each step of the computation corresponds to an actual invariant of some genuine KBH. So basically, you break the crossing of the big computational river by putting many sort of stepping steps, stepping stones along the way. I could tell you more, the actual computational complexity is slightly better than the usual computational complexity of the Alexander polynomial. But I think the more interesting bit is the fact that the computation is broken into meaningful steps. And, well, I don't have time to even say the slogan that I wanted to say at the end, so I will not, and then I'll pass straight to the propaganda, and sorry for giving such a confusing talk.
Questions?
I was a little puzzled when you were showing the example of the KBH with pi 1 and pi 2 and this semi-direct product.
Yeah.
I mean, that the pi 1 and pi 2 is something like cross-module or something like this. Is that something like the structure between pi 1 and pi 2 and their interaction?
It's
the operations in your KBH. reminded me a lot of those, but I was wondering if there's any more.
So, well, I could say something, not something that's terribly valuable, so maybe I'll skip it and tell you later.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, assuming the same set of conjectural generalization, can you connect surfaces of higher genus to those leaf algebras?
Some complications arise, but much of the theory persists. So, I don't know how to say more, but basically, yes, there is a universal finite type invariant of arbitrary genus ribbon knots in R4. Some complications arise, but at the end, yes, you have an invariant. In fact, even more, there is an invariant of some sort of foam surfaces. And that's the sort of that's the story that leads to Alexeyev Taurasi and Kashiwara Verne.
The other question? Not let's stand drop.